Board will then go into board discussion, at which no further testimony is received unless specifically requested of and granted by the chairwoman. We will structure board discussion by going around to each board member two times for comment. You do not have to provide comments if you do not have any. If you're joining us virtually, please make sure that you locate the control panel. And if you are wanting to submit a comment, please use the raise your hand feature. I'll be notified and call on you by name. First item on the regular agenda is the petition of Lewis Burgos, Hansen Architects, 23-002538-COA 109 West Broughton Street, illuminated sign.
Thank you. This is Jamie Zarillo presenting the staff recommendation for 109 West Broughton Street. Excuse me. The applicant is requesting approval for an illuminated sign at 109 West Broughton Street. We've talked with the applicant, and they've gone through a few revisions. However, initially what was proposed was an illuminated sign here, which is a projecting sign. And then there's this previously approved wall sign or fascia sign here. However, under the sign ordinance, you're only permitted one of these signs per public entryway. So staff informed the applicant and they revised it. And I misspoke during the pre-meeting. They're actually proposing to remove this fascia sign and go with just the projecting sign and then include a window sign here. However, window signs that are under 10% of the total window area aren't required to have a permit. So that wasn't reviewed. Only the illuminated sign was reviewed. And this was the, this was the initial proposed sign design. They were proposing initially to have external exposed neon on top of these letters. However, we talked with the applicant and we showed them our recommendation. They proposed a altered proposal, which is included here, where the neon is further set back in the sign, and they used these adjacent examples as their reference with Leopold's Avalon. So with that, staff's recommendation was to approve it. Request for illuminated sign at 109 West Broughton Street with the following condition, which is utilize internal illumination with reverse silhouette or cutout letters instead of rose external neon illumination. And I'll answer any questions that you have.
Does anybody have any questions for staff? Okay. Thank you, Jamie. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Good afternoon. I'm Patrick Phelps with Hansen Architects representing the applicant. Just want to thank staff, first of all, for working with us through the application process so that we could make the modifications in order to get in compliance with the ordinance. And if there are any other questions, I think that we've made the adjustments that were requested, removing the second primary use sign and then also setting back the neon illumination within the light box as recommended by the ordinance. So happy to answer any questions.
Does anybody have any questions for the petitioner? Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there a member of the public that would like to comment? Anybody virtually? Okay. At this time, we'll now go into board discussion and no further comment will be accepted. Mr. Altshuler, I will start with you. Ms. Quinn?
No comment.
Mr. Higgins?
No comment.
Mr. Thompson? And Ms. Taylor?
No comment.
Okay, since nobody had comment the first time around, we will now entertain a motion.
Gwen, I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review approve the petition number 23-002538-COA 109 West Broughton Street, provided that the conditions outlined in the staff recommendation are met.
Okay, do I have a second?
Second.
Okay. Motion on the floor is to approve with the staff recommended condition. Mr. Altshuler, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Gwen?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
And Ms. Taylor?
Aye.
Okay. With that, the motion has been approved. The next item on the agenda is the petition of Eric Polching, sorry if I totally butchered that, with Hanson Architects 23-002531-COA 425 East St. Julian Street Rehabilitation.
Thank you. This is Jamie Zarillo presenting the staff recommendation for 425 East St. Julian Street. The applicant is requesting approval for rehabilitation. Following includes the following scope of work. On the front facade, this includes removal of storm windows and burglar bars, in-kind repair and repainting of exterior trim and sashes, removal of first floor vinyl shutters and replacement with operable composite shutters, replace existing asphalt shingle roofing with TPO, and repoint brick chimney. Pull up an elevation. And then on the rear facade, the scope of work includes the removal of storm windows and burglar bars again, removal and salvage of an existing window, which is this window here, install an existing door into the opening of the removed window, install a new double hung true divided light wood window into the existing door opening, and then move the existing metal canopy to align with the new position of the existing door and repoint rear brick fence. So to go a little more in depth into the scope of work on the rear, this is the existing conditions on the rear. And this is the proposed demo plan. And then the proposed plan. So moving this or swapping these two and centering the entryway and maintaining the metal canopy and moving it. Staff did have some comments. First, there were two comments regarding the brick repointing, which I'll go over those, which we were asking that they provide a specification for the ASTM mortar type specifically, and then also ensure that a 4-foot by 4-foot test patch is installed, which is required by the HTBR brick repointing standards. And then for the scope of work on the rear, we add the condition that they utilize the existing window for this new opening as opposed to salvaging the existing window and installing a new one so that the historic window is kept and put into this new opening. But with that, our recommendation is approval with those three conditions. I'll answer any questions you have for staff.
Does anybody have any questions for staff?
One quick one. So with the moving of the door and the replacement of the window, so staff supports those moves?
So long as the existing window is used as opposed to being removed and replaced with a new window.
Any additional questions for staff? Okay. Thank you, Jamie. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Good afternoon. Eric Puljung with Hanson Architects. Thank you for reviewing our project today. In reviewing the staff comments, we can say that we are in agreement with all three of the comments and conditions that are provided here. We will do our best to initially inspect the existing window, confirm the condition and the size is going to work in that door opening. And if all is good, we will certainly be doing that. If that cannot be done, we will come back to staff and let them know that there's an issue with that. But we initially believe that that is something that we can do. We'd be happy to pursue that.
Okay. I do have some questions for you. So what's the justification for moving the door and the window? What's the justification for swapping those?
It has to do with the way the floor plan functions and how the adjacencies of the interior spaces to the exterior spaces are working in the floor plan.
Okay. Because it looks like from the floor plans that you submitted that it just opens up into a singular room.
Right.
Right.
It does. But the new door location allows for a more convenient access to the kitchen space and the center of the room.
Okay.
And within the tax credit review process that we're going through right now, we have found out that they would prefer that we use that as the primary and only entry into that lower level apartment. So that will become the way in and out of that apartment. So centrally locating that will be important.
So state approved, you swapping them even though it's going into a singular
yes.
space?
Yes.
Interesting. Okay. Does anybody else have any questions for the applicant?
Yes, I do. Is there going to be any historic building materials removed in order to make that swap?
We are not intending to remove any historic building materials.
Okay. With regard to the door window swap, is there any hardship created if it's not approved?
I guess that's a that's a hard question to answer specifically. I know that the intent is for the owner to occupy this location, and they are desiring to have this first floor residence in the historic district, and this was a big component of them being interested in making this apartment work for them. So I would say the hardship would be to the owner and user of the apartment.
Any additional questions? Okay, thank you.
Okay.
At this time, is there a member of the public that would like to comment? Anybody virtually? Wow, really? Okay. Then at this time, we will now go into board discussion and no further public comment will be accepted. Ms. Taylor, I will start with you.
I concur with staff's recommendations, and I guess it's good to hear that the applicant is also in agreement with that. I do have some concerns about swapping the door and the window out. But no historic building materials are going to be removed, and it appears that the openings are going to be the same other than obvious. But I'd say overall, I concur with staff's recommendation.
Okay, Mr. Thompson.
Good afternoon. I also concur with staff's recommendation at this point.
Okay, Mr. Higgins.
I concur with most of the recommendations, but with regard to the swapping of the door and the window, first of all, there will be historic materials removed from the existing window location to down to the ground level. I don't see any hardship, you know, if it was an accessibility issue, something along those lines. It's purely for convenience. It's the way the house is built. I cannot support those.
Ms. Gwen?
No comments.
Mr. Alshuler?
Recommendations.
Okay. We'll go around one more time. Ms. Taylor? Anything additional?
Nothing else.
Mr. Thompson?
No additional.
Mr. Higgins?
No additional.
Ms. Gwynn?
No comment.
Mr. Alshuler?
No further comment.
Okay. My own comment is that I will agree with Mr. Higgins that I feel the swapping of the door and the window is completely unnecessary and is going to remove historic fabric in an unnecessary way. However, we will now entertain motion.
Higgins.
Yes.
I move the Historic District Board of Review with regard to MPC file 23-002531 COA, which is for 425 East St. Julian Street, approve the request for rehabilitations with staff requirements 1 and 2, and add one denying the moving of the window and the door.
Okay. I'll second that.
Thank you. One second. I'm writing notes. Seconded by Taylor. Okay, so the current motion on the floor is to approve the application with conditions 1 and 2, and then change the third to the denial of the removal of the existing rear door. Window swap, and seconded by Ms. Taylor. Ms. Taylor, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
No.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Ms. Gwen?
Aye.
And Mr. Alshuler?
No.
Okay, with that, the motion passed as presented. Can you turn it to the agenda? I don't have a printed agenda today. Thank you. The next item on the regular agenda is the petition of Mike DeClaire, with Wakely Properties LLC 23-002527-COA 143 Houston Street, demolition.
Good afternoon. This is Caitlin Chamberlain presenting the request for demolition of 143 Houston Street. The applicant is requesting approval for the deconstruction and demolition of a non-contributing building located at 143 Houston Street. The long-term purpose of the project is to construct a new restaurant building on the property. Preliminary design plans were included but are not a part of this review. Per the applicant, the project as stated above involves the deconstruction and removal of the existing one-story structure located at the corner of Oglethorpe Avenue and Houston Street. It is within the boundaries of the Downtown Historic District and the Green Ward on a non-historic, non-contributing corner lot. Houston Street was built in 1976 and is a non-contributing building. There are a mix of contributing and non-contributing resources in the vicinity. The building is currently vacant due to the fact that it was deemed structurally unsound. The applicant has stated that the CMU blocks, wood frame members, ceiling joists, and rafters will be salvaged and reused. Houston Street meets the criteria for demolition. It is not included on the Historic District Contributing Resources map as it has been deemed to not have historic significance. Because the building was constructed in 1976, it is outside the period of significance and does not possess integrity of location, design, setting, materials, workmanship, feeling, or association. The site is not associated with the lives or significance events or persons and does not embody distinctive characteristics, the work of a master, and is highly unlikely to yield information important in history or prehistory. The applicant has provided a detailed explanation, including photographs documenting the current condition of the building and why deconstruction and demolition cannot be avoided. There's some more images. And then additionally, a letter from Wakely Properties LLC was provided detailing a visual non-destructive structural examination of the property done by S. Mark Boyles, a licensed structural engineer, on April 25th. Mr. Boyles determined that the building is structurally unstable and far too deteriorated to feasibly renovate. His professional opinion is that the building should be completely demolished. And here's just some photos from that assessment. So with that, staff recommends to approve the request for deconstruction and demolition of the structurally unsound non-contributing building located at 143 Houston Street as requested because the standards for non-contributing demolition are met. Thank you, and I will be happy to answer any questions.
Does anybody have any questions for staff? Okay. Thank you, Caitlin. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Hi, I'm Mike DeClaire representing Wakely Properties. I appreciate you guys taking time this afternoon to review our petition.
Hi, I'm Christina Swenson, and I'm the architect working on the project.
We'll be glad to.
Does anybody have any questions for the applicant? Okay. We don't have any questions for you.
Oh, awesome.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you. Is there a member of the public that would like to comment? Anybody virtually? Man, y'all are making this easy so far today. Okay, then we will now go into board discussion and no further public comment will be accepted. Mr. Altshuler, I will start with you.
I see no reason to save the property.
Ms. Gwynn?
No comments.
Mr. Higgins?
No comment.
Mr. Thompson?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear your comment, David.
He said he had no comment.
Sorry, I said I see no reason to save the property.
Okay, yeah, thank you. I'm way over here, I guess.
No,
I have no comments.
Okay, since nobody has any comments, we will now entertain a motion.
I'll move that the Savannah Downtown Historic District Board of Review approve the petition number of Wakely Properties, petition of Mike DeClaire, Wakely Properties, 23-002527, COA, as petition as requested because the petition is in compliance with the visual compatibility criteria and design standards as set forth.
Yeah. Just for future reference, make sure you speak into your mic. Does anybody? do I have a second?
Gwen, second.
Ms. Gwen. Okay. Mr. Altshuler, how do you vote?
Aye.
Ms. Gwen.
Aye.
Mr. Higgins.
Aye.
Mr. Thompson.
Aye.
And Ms. Taylor.
Aye.
Okay. With that, the application has been approved as requested. The next item on the regular agenda is the petition of James Colucci, Pantheon ADC, 23-002537-COA, 11 Jefferson Street, special exception request.
Thank you. This is Leah. The applicant is requesting approval for a special exception for the previously approved new construction parking garage located at 11 Jefferson Street. This is before, and this is after. There we go. The applicant's special exception, the request for the special exception is from the standard here, the setback standard, large-scale development, which reads, incorporate setbacks within the facade. Setbacks between street-fronting walls shall be at least 24 feet wide and 8 feet deep and contain windows in the walls perpendicular to the street in order to reduce the setback standard from the required 8 feet to 5 feet 10 inches. And just so, you know, I have a little typo right here. I should have said 5 feet, 10 inches, not 5 feet, 2 inches. So that's their reduction is from 8 to 5 feet, 10. So this is before. And this is after. Basically, what it comes down to is that they need to have a sidewalk along the lane to be able to access the robotic parking garage. And the majority of that sidewalk cannot be in the public right-of-way due to the width of the right-of-way as well as fire truck access. Therefore, they have to make the building smaller. You can see here in the before, the building is on the property line, and in the after, it's set back from the property line, so about half of the sidewalk is on the public right-of-way and about half is on their property, which then takes this dimension down to the 5 feet 10 inches from the 8 feet. So the review criteria for a special exception, the first one is whether the use for which the special exception is being considered would be located, operated, and maintained in a manner in conformance with the goals, policies, and objectives of the comprehensive plan and the provisions of the ordinance. Per the comprehensive plan, local historic districts are established by ordinance and include specific design standards. These standards ensure that the rehabilitation of historic structures and new development are consistent with the historic character of the district by requiring a certificate of appropriateness review process. The proposal is consistent with the comprehensive plan and the provisions of the ordinance. The second criterion is whether the special exception would not be detrimental to the public interest, health, safety, welfare, function, and appearance of the adjacent uses or vicinity. So this change actually is proposed to create a safer environment for the public to walk along the lane out of the robotic parking garage. Staff is recommending approval for a special exception as requested because the special exception criteria are met, and I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Does anybody have any questions for staff? Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
James Glucci with Pantheon ADC.
Do you have anything to add?
Thanks to staff for working with us. We approached staff about a month ago or 6 weeks ago to kind of talk over. We had met with traffic and engineering specifically about the project just to go over next steps. And during that phase of the project, we realized that fire truck access was 20.5 feet. So we had a flush sidewalk in that lane so the fire truck could go. But in order to maintain safety of pedestrians, we felt it'd make more sense to keep that sidewalk completely out of the public right of way or completely out of the fire truck access clear right of way, which is 20.5 feet. So we've decided to make our building slightly smaller. And moving that structural grid impacted the front of the building and just in that corner right there. So other than that, we agree with staff's recommendations, and I can answer any questions if you have any.
Thank you. Does anybody have any questions for the applicant? Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Is there a member of the public that would like to comment virtually or in person? Wow. Okay. At this time, we will now enter into board discussion and no further public comment will be accepted. Ms. Taylor, I will start with you.
No comment.
Mr. Thompson?
No comment.
Mr. Higgins?
No comment.
Ms. Gwen?
Just appreciate the applicant's willingness to work with staff to accommodate the design.
Mr. Altshuler?
No comment.
Okay. We will now entertain a motion.
This is Gwen. I move that the Savannah Downtown Historic Board of Review approve the petition number 23-002537-COA 11 Jefferson Street because the special exception criteria has been met.
Do I have a second?
Higgins, second.
Okay. Ms. Taylor, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Ms. Gwen?
Aye.
And Mr. Altshuler?
Aye.
Okay. With that, the petition has been approved as requested. The next item on the regular agenda is the petition of Kevin Rose, Rose Architects, 23-002530-COA, 301 Alice Street, Demolition and New Construction, Part 1, Height and Mass. And I am going to recuse myself.
Thank you. This is Leah Mahalik again. The applicant is requesting approval to demolish a non-contributing building and for new construction, Part 1, Height and Mass. Pardon me. I don't know how this got rotated. All right, here we go. And for new construction, Part 1 Height and Mass for a single family residence with a four-car garage for the property located at 301 Alice Street. Going back to the photos of the building, on February 8th, 2023, the HGBR recommended approval to City Council to change the status of 301 Alice Street from a contributing to a non-contributing structure in the National Historic Landmark District. Staff's recommendation was for denial. Then on March 9th, 2023, City Council approves the change. 301 Alice Street is now a non-contributing building on the historic building map for the National Historic Landmark District. With regard to demolition findings and the criteria for demolition, any non-contributing resource must first be evaluated and considered for contributing status prior to the issuance of a COA for demolition. So we are going to go through the criteria for that. So the building was constructed circa 1952, which is within the period of significance of 1733 to 1960. The site is not associated with the lives of significant events or persons and does not embody distinctive characteristics, the work of a master, and is highly unlikely to yield information important in history or prehistory. However, staff finds that it does retain its original location, general design, setting, and some materials and workmanship, feel, and association. Staff finds that the building is associated with the automobile era, which has made a significant contribution to the broad patterns of Savannah's history. Sanborn maps indicate that this building was used for auto repair. Staff finds that this building still meets the criteria for contributing status. Per the requirements, the applicant has provided a detailed explanation why demolition cannot be avoided, and that includes photographs documenting the current condition of the building and why they believe demolition cannot be avoided. I'm going to go through a little bit of the a little bit of that report here. Here's some photographs from that engineering report. Quoting from the report, some of the structural conditions the engineer identified include, I'm going to quote, from visual observations, the structure was found to be in good general condition with some areas of deterioration from exposure to environmental elements. However, the structural elements of the building appear to be more utilitarian than typical commercial buildings, with lower structural capacities than commercial building codes would typically allow. The analysis of the roof deck shows that the edge is not capable of supporting live loading along the edge. An analysis shows that the existing roof purlins are not adequate to support a code-required live load of 20 pounds per square foot. Upon inspection of some of the roof purlins, the section shows some mild corrosion and deformations that reduce the structural integrity of the members. So what I want to do now is go to the recommendation for demolition before we talk about the part one height and mass. And staff is recommending denial to demolish the non-contributing building. However, if the HDBR approves the demolition, staff is recommending the following conditions. One, that the building shall be deconstructed rather than demolished and the historic materials salvaged. And two, that a COA must first be issued for the new construction of the replacement building prior to approval of the demolition. I wanted to make sure that you all wanted to discuss this section first before moving to the new construction.
Are there any questions for staff regarding the demolition?
No. Do you want me to go through part one?
Yes, please.
Okay. All right. So with regard to new construction part one height and mass and visual compatibility, staff finds per the context elevations, which you can see here, that the height is visually compatible. Although atypically wide for a single family residence, the mass is broken down into two distinct masses along Allen Street. I'm trying to zoom in here. Come on. So this is the front elevation along Alice Street, and it's broken down into two distinct masses, making it more compatible with the widths of contributing buildings. Although a central entrance is atypical, this design with a double door in the center appears as two entrances with a mass on either side, similar to a side hallway plan. With regard to design standards, we just had a couple of minor standard concerns, and that door frame shall be inset not less than 3 inches, same with window sashes. eaves shall extend no less than 12 inches beyond supporting walls, same as the accessory building. And then we needed some confirmation as to whether the driveway is going to apron on the public right of way. It needs to apron on the private property. Come on. Excuse me while this is slow for some reason. There is a note here that says that this is the garage apron and is pointing to public property. So we need some confirmation on that. This might be the one to look at, is that curb cuts shall not exceed 20 feet in width, and they have a 48 foot 8 inch curb cut here. The footprint of the accessory dwelling unit shall be a minimum or maximum of 40% of the habitable floor area of the principal dwelling unit, and we need that calculation to be provided. So, staff is recommending to continue the new construction until a decision is rendered by the HGBR for the demolition of the non-contributing building. The petitioner is also to address the following. One, door frames and window sashes shall not be inset less than 3 inches. Two, eaves on the primary building shall extend no less than 12 inches beyond supporting walls. Eaves and rakes on accessory buildings and dormers shall overhang at least 8 inches. Four, the driveway apron shall not be erected on the public right-of-way. Five, curb cuts shall not exceed 20 feet in width. And six, the footprint of the accessory dwelling unit shall be maximum of 40% of the habitable floor area. Provide the calculation and ensure that that standard is met. I'll be happy to answer any questions about either situation.
Are there any questions for staff on part one?
I just have one. Leah, is there precedent recently for something that's this wide being built in the historic district?
Not that I'm familiar with. It's hard to remember everything that has come through, but that's why I sort of commented on the width and felt that it was actually sort of broken down a little bit into two masses that helped that width. As far as the width of the carriage house, there are a lot of carriage houses around there that are very long, and they're all new construction.
Are there any additional questions for staff?
No further questions.
Go ahead.
I was trying to find a picture, but this is going to be a four-car garage?
Yeah. Do you want me to pull it up?
Please, yeah. Mm-hmm. It could be important because not sure how they can break up four-car garage into 20-foot things in order to have any curb area, like two on one side and two on the other.
Yeah, they do have a presentation that they're going to show how they might be able to do that.
Okay, well, I'll wait. Thank you.
This is the rear elevation here.
Yeah, there.
Anything else for staff? Thank you, Leah.
Thanks.
Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Sure. Hello, my name is Harley Krinsky. I am here representing the project at 301 Alice. This will be my third time before this board. The last time I was here, the board recommended to approve the delisting of 301 Alice as a contributing historic structure. That recommendation was sent to City Council, which approved this board's recommendation. 301 Alice is no longer a contributing historic structure, and we come before you today to approve the demolition of 301 Alice and the approval of Part 1 to replace 301 Alice with a single-family residential structure. I would like to refresh the board based on research into 301 Alice. The original carriage-style double doors on the north and south side have been replaced. Windows have been replaced and added through time. Also, based on the engineering report that was submitted, in order for 301 Alice to come up to code, regardless of any use, the defining feature of the roof and eaves would inevitably have to change. There is not much left on this building that is original. And if the roof line and the eaves change in order to accommodate modern loads and insulation, there is not much historic integrity that we are saving. The building was constructed during the time of economic decay that saw this neighborhood transition from a once vibrant residential neighborhood to warehouse buildings and empty lots. With the support of all the adjoining neighbors and the church, demolishing 301 Alice and replacing it with a residential structure that has historically been on the site will continue to revitalize this historically residential neighborhood. Now I'm going to turn it over to Kevin.
Hello, Kevin Rose with Rose Architects. I'm here to speak towards the part one section. It's always a little tricky to kind of figure out where the line from part one to part two leaves off. And some of the comments from staff that we've actually been talking with over the last couple of days have already been addressed in our presentation. I guess I'd like to go down that list. One, to address Mr. Higgins' comment. We tried to break this into two buildings, but also to harken back to some of those central entrances that you see in these duplexes that are 60 feet wide in the neighborhood. I think it's 406 and 416. Gaston Street would be an example of that sort of entrance. It's one of the better buildings in the neighborhood. There's a lot of bad buildings in the neighborhood just over time, and we didn't want to take inspiration from those. So we tried to use the proportions of the historic contributing structures in the neighborhood rather than some of the more contemporary and kind of all over the place with their scheme as far as scale is concerned. So if I may just go through the list from staff. The number one, door frames and window sashes, we weren't sure that was a part of part one, but with our brick molding details, we're gonna have over 4 inches of relief there. So both on the doors and the windows, we're gonna be fine on that. I can show you that on our presentation. We added a detail. Leah, is it up now? So just to go through it, you can see here, this is just a quick windowsill detail that we did for this presentation. We're going to be, you know, obviously working with brick mold shapes that are contemporary, but that harken back to the typical way that you would see windows detailed in a brick building. That covers number one. Number two, eaves on the primary building. We have a detail here which shows a schematic. We're well over 12 inches and 8 inches on both the primary structure and the carriage house. That's a detail that we're going to refine before part two. This just illustrates that we are planning on meeting that requirement that staff commented on. So that covers two and three. Number four is a little trickier. We have the building next door as an example on how they treated it, and I feel like we have some sort of photograph here that illustrates how we'll be able to do that. If I can zoom in here. You can see here how they've taken two different doors, two doors, and created them into one curb cut with kind of an island on the center. This is a common condition in the neighborhood for the new structures. We're not looking to reinvent the wheel here, but we're perfectly happy to make ours adhere to what's happened here and with some of the other projects. Once again, driveways we didn't think was part of part one, so we didn't include that design in this submittal, but as you can see, this is what we're going to use as a solution for this. The footprint is a little bit up to debate. We did the calculation as we see the calculation is supposed to be done with the footprint versus the inhabitable area of the main building. We come in well under that, not well under that, but enough that we can't fudge the numbers there. There's also another within the zoning code, building coverage and size, and it's a little vague, and I just want to put this out there because I feel like we've got it covered on both counts. So we have the calculation, which II under building coverage and size, residential districts within residential zoning districts, the floor area of an accessory structure shall not exceed 40% of the floor area of the principal building. We meet that the way we are interpreting the ordinance. Our calculations come in. I think we're allowed to have roughly 1,500 and some change, and we're under that, in the lower end of the 1,500s. The third triple I under building coverage and size, it says size non-residential, subject to maximum building coverage standards. I feel like this is a hole in the zoning ordinance, and we're not trying to pull a fast one here. We're just saying that this is a commercial zone property. So 100% lot coverage would be the rule here. I feel like this needs to be addressed by the zoning board. That's not something that this board can talk about, but we're covered on this project as well. And I'm always happy to stand in front of y'all and say, this is something we can fix with our ordinance to make downtown a better situation so y'all can rule more appropriately situations like this. Are there any questions?
Mr. Thompson.
I'm looking at the example of the garage access points, and it appears to me there are no curb cuts for 100 feet except for that one spot in front of the door. So explain to me how you're going to do that in your building in terms of the curb cuts.
As far as
I getting it right, Leo, it should be 20 feet. Is that right? For each one, maybe.
Which
sketch.
I know, I'm trying to zoom out here. I think that's on the site plan. Really, I think crazy. Come on. That it right there? I can probably see it. Okay, you can see the dimensions here where you have the curb cuts. We just added these dimensions in to show where these doors happen. We do have a corner condition here where we're trying to stay away from the corner, which is why we've pushed the garage doors down. There's also a fire hydrant and electrical pole out there as well at this point in time. So we push all the doors off the corner for safety purposes and to keep the fire hydrant in place.
So, okay. All right. Thank you. I didn't see this drawing when I went through it.
After staff made comments, we added that yesterday.
All right. Thank you.
Are there additional questions for the applicant? Thank you, Mr. Rose. Is there a member of the public that would like to comment? I'll remind you to state your name for the record and keep your comments to 3 minutes or less.
Hello, my name is Andrew Jones. I'm with the Oglethorpe Plan Coalition. And I'm glad that today you're going to revisit the issue of the demolition of the building solely because I was at the last hearing and I remember Mr. Higgins raising the issue that the building had been an auto repair in the insurance maps. And there had been a lot of testimony that had nothing to do with autos. And I believe the board echoed some of that. So there was certainly a lot of confusion in people's minds. Was this related to auto or not? So today could be an opportunity to clarify that. But I'm focused mostly on part one. And, you know, the issue is not this building or nothing, the building that's proposed. The issue is this building as proposed or something better that's more visually compatible. And the visual compatibility guidelines address solids and voids, as well as the directionality of the building. Now, no one in this hearing yet has actually showed you pictures of buildings. So let's look at the pictures of buildings in the neighborhood. There is a dearth of contributing buildings. This is a little harder to figure out from visual compatibility in terms of the visually related buildings, but you can see 406 through 416 West Gaston, 457 to 467 Montgomery. These are both within a block. And you can see that actually what you have in this neighborhood are wide structures. They happen to be divided into multiple houses, but aesthetically they're reading as wide structures. And then the window openings are vertically oriented. So the overall structure is horizontal in direction, but the elements create vertical motion. And directionality under 7.89i is one of the criteria you need to use for visual compatibility. The other buildings are brick buildings. You can see they're roughly the proportion of the proposed building, but again, a continuous cornice line so that the building reads as a big horizontal mass. Certainly, this proposal is for a single building as opposed to multiple houses, but when you read a building, you read the entire mass. So I do think that perhaps the staff recommendation of breaking it into two masses is actually going in the wrong direction in terms of being visually compatible with the other structures in the neighborhood. I think the architect can make appropriate changes, keeping close to the floor plan. The building as designed is very squat proportions. You can see those windows on the second floor. Some of them are wider than they are high, which is unlike most of the buildings that I showed you. There's too much horizontality in the direction in terms of the window formats and a lot of brick mass. So again, the solids and the voids aren't matching what you see in the neighborhood. The fix is just to take the rhythms of the other houses in the neighborhood, which is the proposal below, a continuous cornice. And yes, they have a single door because it's a single house. That's what it is. But the masses all read more appropriately like the neighboring buildings. And if you...
Mr. Jones, can you begin to wrap up your comments,
yes,
please?
Yes. And you can see when you superimpose it against images of the other buildings, it's certainly much more visually compatible. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Are there any other members of the public that would like to speak on this matter? Please state your name for the record.
Thank you. I'm Steve Edwards, and I represent the Downtown Neighborhood Association. We have two general comments on the proposal. First, we'd like to support the petitioner's request to demolish the existing structure. We, in view of what appear to be reasonable questions about the actual date of the structure and the deteriorated state of the building, it's hard to see how the historic nature of the area is enhanced by its continued presence. Our second comment relates to the design of the building that's proposed to replace it. We're not going to comment on the specifics of the design. Mr. Jones and others have already done that. Our main concern is with the requirements of the ordinance relating to visual compatibility, and our view that it doesn't fully address the specific requirements of the ordinance. We want to point out that all but one of the categories in 7.8.9 relating to visual compatibility require that the new building be visually compatible with contributing buildings to which they are visually related. And the statute elsewhere defines visually related to mean the relationship between the contributing buildings within the view of the subject building. With greater weight being placed upon adjacent historic buildings. Excuse me. There are only three contributing buildings that are within view of the proposed new structure, only one of which is clearly visible from the staff report and the submission. The closest and most adjacent is 302 through 306 Alice Street, which is a single-story, three-unit building with an extended wooden entry porches and the gable roof. That was built in 1852. The next closest is 308 through 310 Alice Street, the First Tabernacle Missionary Baptist Church, which was built in 1900. And the third is in the back, away from the facade of the building. That's 305 West Gordon Street that was built in 1880 and is currently unoccupied and in very poor condition. It also has a gable roof. Most of the discussion of compatibility or comparability in the submission of the staff report and the staff report relates to properties that are not within view of the proposed property. Our only point here is that that more attention should be paid to the specific requirements of the ordinance to make certain that the proposed structure is visually compatible with the surrounding contributing buildings, again, of which there are only three. I'm not going to address the specifics here, other than to say, if you look at those three contributing buildings and compare it to the proposed buildings, I'm reminded of a quote from Sesame Street. One of these things is not like the other ones. And I think if you look at it, it's a very modern design, and I would have hoped that the concession of the destruction of a property on the historic map would have been reflected by a design that gave more of a nod to the historic character. But nevertheless, we won't officially or specifically object to the design. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Edwards. Anyone else from the public? Please state your name for the record.
My name is Ryan Jarles with Historic Savannah Foundation. As you may recall, I did previously come here before you all regarding this property. I also spoke before City Council regarding this property. At that time at City Council, we came with a warning that an approval of removal of a building of this age from the contributing building list would bring forward ideas that buildings from the 40s or 50s or 1960, as the landmark district ends, are not, or of a simple design, are not fit to be contributing buildings within our district, which was a fear we had. I think most people with a background in architectural history or history of Savannah understand that 1960 or the 1950s was not a period of the highest design or architectural interest in this area. I believe the petitioner referred to it as a time of decay. But we have to take, for instance, Beach Institute neighborhood. There's an entire block of CMU one-story block houses from 501 to 511 Hartford Street. These are labeled as contributing. At some point, someone determined that they should be, and I believe they should be. So are buildings like this next? Could they be removed from the list? Could they be demolished? We're not sure. It was a simpler, it was a more modern design era. Our belief is that opening that door for removing buildings of this area would lead to more and more people coming forward with the same plan. I did again say that at City Council, and I believe HSF was right. We see the demolition of mid-century or similar era buildings in full force in Savannah. It started with the GBI building, which is now gone. It continues with this building. We'll see it on the next petition. At this coming HPC meeting, we see three mid-century modern buildings up for demolition. So this is happening. Savannah is not just 19th or 20th century buildings, although it's hard to believe there are some people out there that do like that type of architecture. I'm one of them. But it feels to me that Savannah's erasing an era. I've heard several people in the preservation field mention that to me, that it feels like it's erasing an era. So HSF does not support the demolition of the structure, much like we did not support its removal from the contributing building list in the first place. However, it has been removed from the contributing building list, and it is up to you all to make the decision on this demolition moving forward. But we do ask that you follow staff's recommendation. And on the part one for the new construction, HSF will defer to the comments you've already heard and will defer to staff's commentary. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any other members of the public, or do we have anyone virtually? Would the petitioner like to respond to public comment?
Hello, this is Kevin Rose with Rose Architects again. I lived in a mid-century house, okay? I love mid-century architecture. I have stood before this board on many occasions, whether
It was the building that was torn down to make way for the garden at the Ships of the Sea Museum. I've been in front of this board speaking against the tearing and demolition of the Seaboard building. I also recognize that there were four buildings that were added at one period, which this was this building that we're discussing in Alice Street was a part of. Three of those buildings I consider to be gems. When I was contacted by the owner of the property or the potential builder here of the property, I went through that structure and it never occurred to me that it was contributing because it's four elements, unreinforced concrete block, trusses that are not indicative of the day. They are actually substandard and would have to be altered in a huge fashion. And a roof and siding made of corrugated metal, which is not even allowed in this district. And believe me, I did the trustee's garden site and I put a lot of corrugated metal downtown, which is not legal at this point. So then it leaves us with some windows. That's really all we have left. Once we alter the roof to make the eaves work and to make the trusses work, we don't have a building that speaks to preservation. And I see it as I'm going to be in front of the HPC speaking out against the buildings being torn down. They're proposed to be torn down on Forsyth Park. I'm going to be here speaking against that. Those are fine examples. This is not a building that I would call a great example of anything other than a place where Bubba fixed some cars after the other important shop was already full. This was a secondary structure. And I guess I want to appeal to the board to say that two architects went through that building. I can't speak about myself, but the other one's a very well-respected preservation architect in town. And we both agreed that we were blindsided when we found out that this building was listed as contributing. I'd like to leave it at that.
Thank you, Mr. Rose. We will now enter into board discussion and no further public comment will be accepted. Yes.
Leah, on the part one, height and mass, where is the ending of what we are looking at? Because there's been a lot of discussion as to visual compatibility, but with regard to design. And that, in my impression, is part two. We are looking at height and mass, correct?
Yes.
And not design.
Well, design details is what, yeah. So it's like you're looking at the rhythm of the openings, where the, you know, the size of the openings, those kinds of things. But you're not looking at the materials or what's in the openings or colors or those sorts of things. Does that help? Okay.
Okay. We will now enter into board discussion and no further public comment can be made. I'll start with you, Ms. Taylor.
Okay. And I'm assuming that we're going to discuss both pieces of this application at this point, first time around, or just the denial, and then go into the continuance.
For simplicity, let's discuss the demolition first, and then we'll go around on part one.
Okay. Regarding the denial, I'm in support of staff's recommendation to deny demolition. I felt the same way in February when we discussed this application. I feel like because it was not well maintained doesn't mean it doesn't have integrity. There is an association with the automotive industry. It was built during the, in 1952, which is during the era of significance. I see it still as a contributing structure. So I am against the demolition of this building. And I think HSF made some good points as well that, this could open up a whole nother series of demolitions down the road, just because somebody wants to redevelop it for something different. So I am in support of staff's denial to demolish.
Mr. Thompson.
Well, I agree with Mr. Rose's comments on the demolition section. First of all, our bosses approved the demolition request or the decertification of a historic building. Also, I remember those four items that were contributing, auto contributing on the 2013-ish. I forget what year that was. Do you remember, Leah? Pardon me? 2010. There were four items. Three of them are appropriate, and I grew up with the service station, and they all look like service stations to me. My other comment is despite that when that building was built, it probably should have never been built in that neighborhood, and that a change in that area would be welcome, I think, by anyone in the area. Lastly, on part one, I do agree with the continuance. I think the compatibility of that design doesn't quite fit there, and there can be do better on that. So I'm in favor of not in favor of the staff recommendation for denial, and in favor of the continuance for part one.
Thank you, Mr. Thompson. Mr. Higgins?
I continue to support the denial of the demolition of this. I echo Ms. Taylor's comments and the Savannah Foundation's comments. This building is part of the evolution of the neighborhood. There are so many opportunities for
Mr. Higgins, can you speak into the mic so
we
can hear? Thank you.
It's part of the evolution of the neighborhood. There are opportunities for creative reuse of this building. I've seen nothing explored there. My view has not changed.
Thank you, Mr. Higgins. Mr. Altschul?
I guess I don't have the imagination to see how this building enhances the city of Savannah in any way. It was built at a moment when we were not quite sure what we were doing architecturally, and it's utterly utilitarian. It may speak of a moment, but I'm not sure that's a very good moment. And I'd be very much in favor of starting over.
Thank you. We'll go around one more time, Ms. Taylor.
Same on the same subject? Okay.
Same subject.
I'm just going to say one more thing about the fact that just because it's a utilitarian building doesn't mean it doesn't have significance. There are tons of buildings out there that are historic, that are gas stations, that are bakeries, that are plain buildings, but they all tell a story. And this building still tells a story. It tells a story of something that existed there in 1952 and was part of the automotive business that was in that area. Maybe it shouldn't have been built there. You know, it didn't survive as well as some of the other buildings have, but it still has significance being there. And that's why I feel like it needs to stay.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor. Mr. Thompson?
Well, I guess Abe Lincoln didn't sit there, sleep there, so I guess it's missing that criteria. I have a question relating to a board motion that would be approved to recommend denial or approve the staff recommendation on that. Would that still be able to go before city council? Counting heads right now.
Is this working?
They go to city council to overrule this board?
No, it would go to ZBA for appeal.
Oh, ZBA.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. All right. That was my question. Thank you.
Mr. Higgins?
No additional comment.
Mr. Altschuler?
No additional comment.
Okay. At this time, we will discuss part one, and I'll start with you, Ms. Taylor.
No comment.
Mr. Thompson.
Part one. No comment. I'm believe the staff's recommendation is appropriate.
Mr. Higgins?
I would support the continuance. I have some great concerns about the height and massing issues with this, especially with regard to the worker cottages directly across the street. I think it just looms over.
Mr. Higgins, again, your microphone, please. Thank you.
Sorry about that. My concerns are with the workers' cottages across the street because I think this building looms over them. I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done on the design issues. So, yes, I would support a continuance.
Mr. Altshuler.
I agree with Mr. Higgins. I think we should continue part one.
All right, I'll go through one more time. Ms. Taylor.
No comment.
Mr. Thompson.
Would these be two votes today?
Pardon?
Be two motions?
Yeah.
Okay.
Correct, Leah? Yeah. Mr. Higgins.
No additional comment.
Mr. Altshuler.
No further comment.
All right, being that there's no further comment, I'll entertain a motion.
Higgins, I move the Savannah Historic District Board of Review with regard to 301 Ellis Street, 23-002530COA. Support the staff recommendation to deny demolition of a non-contributing historic building at 301 Ellis Street.
Second.
There is a motion to deny the demolition and a second by Ms. Taylor. We will now do a voice vote. I'll start with you, Ms. Taylor.
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
No.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Mr. Altshuler?
No.
That means I need to vote. Gwen, no. With that, the motion fails.
I'll need another motion.
So I'll now entertain a motion on part one.
Or you can do another motion on the demolition too. Yep.
Sorry, it's my first time today, kids. I'll entertain a new motion on the demolition.
I have a question on the vote, Madam Chair. So two said no, right? Three said yes.
Other way around.
The motion failed.
Well, three said yes to denying the.
The motion failed, so now the floor is open for a new motion.
Okay. I'll make a motion. Maybe I'm confused. You cheat. The Savannah Historic District Board of Review recommends approval to demolish the non-contributing building at 301 Allen Street for the reasons stated in the report, and that a certificate of appropriateness should be first issued before construction for the new building before demolition of the existing building. The number is 23002530-COA.
Can I ask a question? Were you intending to include conditions one and two or just two?
Well, I was just going to do one. I'm confused on the first vote, so if I'm in the wrong place, somebody needs to help me.
No, you're fine. There were two. You had mentioned the one about a certificate of appropriateness.
Well, I mentioned them in general, then read that one. But
okay.
Yes, I include both of those if that's what you mean, right?
Thank you.
I thought you meant type one or part one.
Nope.
Yeah. Sorry for the confusion.
Just for clarity of the record, can you restate your motion?
Yes, my motion is to approve to demolish the non-contributing building, and as a staff recommendation stated that if we do approve that, there are two conditions listed.
Okay.
There's a motion on the floor. Do I have a second?
Second.
Take a voice vote. Start with you, Ms. Taylor.
No.
Mr. Thompson?
Yes.
Mr. Higgins?
Nay.
Mr. Alschuler?
Yes.
And Gwen, yes. Motion carries. All right, moving on to part one, I will entertain a motion.
Higgins, with regard to 23-002530COA 301 Alice Street, I move the Historic District Board of Review continue. New construction part one, height and mass to the, what's the next meeting?
It is July 12th.
To the July 12th meeting.
Do you want to give them any direction?
I would like them to look at the context more closely.
Is there a second?
Thompson, second.
I have a second from Thompson. We'll now enter into a voice vote. I'll start with you, Mr. Alschuler.
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Ms. Taylor?
Aye.
With that, the motion to continue carries for file number 23-002530-COA 301 Alice Street, part one. Take a brief moment so we can welcome our chairwoman back.
Okie dokie.
The next and last item on the regular agenda is the petition of Eric Polging, Hanson Architects, 23-002535-COA, 127 East Gordon Street, additions and alterations.
Thank you. Leah Mahalik one more time today. The applicant is requesting approval for alterations and additions to the property located at 127 East Gordon Street. And this is the building here, photographs of the building. For the applicant, 127 East Gordon Street was originally constructed in the hall parlor configuration with a wooden side porch added sometime before 1916. Since that time, alterations to the building, including replacing the side porch with a masonry addition and adding an additional stair to the front stoop, have created a different building form and presence on the square and building, and the building currently reads more like an I house with a central hallway. The goal of this project is to restore the building as a single family residence with the hall parlor configuration legible and restore the balance of the building with a wooden porch in the same footprint as the historic wooden porch. To achieve this, again, remember I'm still quoting them, we're proposing the following: a comprehensive rehabilitation for the main house, removal of the brick addition. So this is the brick addition here. An addition with massing and design aesthetic as an enclosed side porch and a masonry element. A previously existing garage location is being reestablished as a garage with a terrace space above. We'll use the Abercorn Street for garage and driveway access. New wood double gates are proposed. The entry stoop will be modified to have a single stair toward Abercorn and also have a masonry construction aesthetic versus that of a formed and poured concrete stoop and stair. We
We are requesting in-kind repairs for the historic main house, including the stucco, stucco detail, wood trim, wood details, wood windows, and rear balcony restoration based on historic images. So front elevation, side elevation, rear elevation. Here's the balcony that they're talking about, which you can see from the side here. And then this is the Abercorn elevation. Primary materials in the new addition are stucco over masonry walls and wood framing and wood detailing on the enclosed porch. On July 14th, 2021, the HGBR issued a COA for alterations, additions, and demolition of a rear yard accessory structure. This project is a different owner and a different applicant, just for the record. The project was similar, although it did not remove the brick addition from the west facade. It restored the addition. The only portion of the project that was executed was the demolition of the rear yard accessory structure, or most of it, anyway. With regard to Secretary of the Interior standards, although not as tall as the historic portion of the building, the addition overpowers the historic building in mass and scale. The footprint appears to be equal to or exceed that of the historic building. The L-shaped addition alters the spaces that characterize the property. Staff finds that the proposed new addition creates a false sense of historical development. It's designed to look like a mostly enclosed porch. There was a porch here historically. However, there's no photographs of it. Staff finds the design conjectural. Staff finds that the brick addition has acquired historic significance through its age. Constructed sometime between 1937 and 1954, it was built during the local district's period of significance and, although physically separating from the main building, still maintains integrity of location, design, setting, materials, workmanship, feel, and association. Although the new work is differentiated from the old, it's not compatible with the scale of the historic building. With regard to visual compatibility, and the rhythm of entrances and porch projections, staff does not find the size of the addition visually compatible. Side porches present on visually related contributing buildings are smaller. Design standards. I do want to show you the colors and finishes that they're proposing. That's here. So existing stucco, Oxford white, existing and new stucco, Oxford white, wood trim and railings is here. It's called brushed aluminum. It's paint though. Wood lattice and doors, midnight blue, window head and grills, herbal escape, and windows, stone white, and the vehicular gates are here. Door frames shall be inset not less than 3 inches, and we do need door specifications as well. Window sashes shall be inset a minimum of 3 inches. And then regarding the front stoop, the entry stoop will be modified to have a single stair toward Abercorn and also have a masonry construction aesthetic versus that of a formed and poured concrete stoop and stair. Composite columns and railings are proposed, which does not meet the standards. Staff does not find the simplified design of the columns visually compatible. Although differentiated, they are oversimplified for a house of this design. The front stoop is missing a newel post at the bottom of the railing and at grade, down here at grade. We did talk about this a little bit at the pre-meeting, and I think some of this is just drafting issues.
We need more information about the reconstructed balcony. We do have a standard that says that they shall not extend more than 3 feet in depth. I know this is a reconstructed balcony, so if there's more information about how deep that reconstructed balcony was, we can look at that. Parking and paving. Vehicular access shall be from the lane or north-south service street. So this property does not have access to a lane, and they're proposing a new entrance on the north-south street. Staff is recommending that the existing curb cut off of the east-west street be removed in order to meet the standard and to only have one point of vehicular access into the site, which is more appropriate. Staff is recommending to continue the request for alterations and additions for a maximum of 90 days in order for the petitioner to address the following. One, redesign in order to retain the historic addition. Two, reduce the scale of the remainder of the new addition. Three, provide door specifications and inset door frames. Four, inset window sashes. Five, revise the design of the front stoop columns to be more in keeping with the historic building's design. Change the composite material to wood for the front stoop elements and provide a newel post at the bottom of the stoop railing. Six, provide the depth of the reconstructed balcony. Seven, remove the curb cut and vehicular gates from the east-west street. I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Does anybody have any questions for Leah? Okay. Would the petitioner please come forward and state your name for the record?
Yeah, that would be great. Thank you. Did you see the most recent one?
Yes.
Thank you so much.
Yes.
I think that's it.
Okay.
There's going to be a diagram. It's going to be after all this. Yes, this is it.
Okay, good.
Thank you so much. Good afternoon, Eric Puljung with Hanson Architects. Thank you for reviewing our petition for 127 East Gordon Street. We have had the pleasure of working with Kathy and Gary Twigg for approximately 6 months now. As they were in the process of acquiring the property, they asked us to get involved and to review the property with them. We have also engaged Ellen Harris with Ethos Preservation Group to be a preservation assistant with us on this project. And we will all collectively be talking to you as the petitioner today. But I know there's several things that need to be discussed as part of this. But I just want to let you know that we have spent a good amount of time looking at this project, considering the history of the project and what our design approach would be to bring this back into a, you know, a thriving property within the historic district in this neighborhood. I know I had a lot of thoughts about this building when I was first brought on the team. And one of the things that has always been on my mind for this particular property for years, I've lived here for 30 years. And I remember just standing in that square one time and just looking at that building and realizing, wow, it's not what I thought it was. This brick addition to the right is far inferior to the historic structure that we have. And when you look at it, you just realize, wow, this is just different. Window proportions, shapes, just all of these pieces didn't make sense. So that was curious to me. And in bringing in Ellen, who will speak next, we were able to dig deeper into the history of the home. And that's where we discovered that this same area was in fact a side porch at one point in time in the house. And that was really the inspiration for how we went about our design approach. So I will pass this to Ellen Harris to talk a little bit more about the addition portion, the existing addition.
Good afternoon, Ellen Harris with Ethos Preservation. So I'm just gonna walk you through a little bit of the evolution of this building and how it came to be. So one of the earliest images that we can access is from the 1888 Sanborn maps. Although the building was constructed prior to that, it was constructed in 1856. And as you can see in its original form, which we feel like this is likely the original
footprint. There was no side porch on there, but it had a hall parlor configuration, which is typical of the era. And you can also see the rear balcony there depicted as well. When we look a little forward to the 1891 bird's eye view, you can see still there's no side porch there. And we can see the front porch configuration just has the single stair going down to the east, which is also typical of this form of architecture. 1898 Sanborn, again, essentially no change from 1888. But in 1916, there's a big change. So sometime between 1898 and 1916, a relatively large wooden three-story porch was added to the west facade. As you can see, the yellow, of course, indicates that it's wood, and the dotted outline indicates that it is was an open porch. Moving forward a little further, we are fortunate to have the 1937 cadastral survey, and you can see that the wooden side porch is still intact. The cadastral survey also gives additional information, including the dimensions of various elements, including that side porch, as well as that rear porch, which incidentally, since staff was asking for the depth of it, we have it documented in the cadastral survey that it was originally 4 feet in depth. We also have that porch well documented photographically because it was only relatively recently removed just in the last few years. So we've got both of those things to assist us with the recreation of it. We think we can do a near perfect restoration of that porch element. So between 1937 and 1954, you can see that same wooden porch has now been bricked in to create a more solid addition sometime between 1937 and 1954. You can also see for the first time in the 1954 Sanborn map that an automobile garage has been added to the property. This garage uses the same bricks. The bricks are identical to the enclosed porch, and so we feel it's very likely that they were built at the same time, they were constructed at the same time, as a pretty safe assumption. Looking back at historic photographs, the earliest historic photograph that we could find dated from 1967, as you can see here. And here's the 1973 Sanborn map, no changes as you can see. And then the 1976 GHS image essentially shows it as it is. So as you can see, it basically has not changed much post the enclosure of the brick of the porch with brick on the addition. So it's been an interesting meeting to hear the previous discussions about whether or not a building is contributing or non-contributing and what the criteria that the board and MPC staff and city council all use to evaluate contributing status. So here you can see this is an image of the contributing building map. Of course, contributing buildings are outlined in, are colored in the purple. Yellow buildings are non-contributing and are outlined in yellow. As I mentioned, it was built in 1856. The porch added sometime prior to 1916. It was bricked in between 1937 and 1954. But Savannah's local period of significance extends to 1960. So that bricked in portion happened within the period of significance. The entire structure is shown as contributing on the contributing buildings map. That is, in effect, a result of where the data is getting pulled from. The layers just show the building footprint. So even buildings that have even very modern additions often will still show the entire building as a purple footprint just because of the nature of how the data gets incorporated. So there is, of course, a section in the NUZO that addresses how a building is determined to be contributing or non-contributing. And there are basically three litmus tests that a building has to meet. And you can see this is the verbiage directly from the ordinance. Contributing buildings include those within the current period of significance. So that's number one. And that criteria is met. And possess integrity of location, design, setting, materials, workmanship, feeling, and association. And we feel that at least some of those criterion are also being met. However, the ordinance goes on to state, and
meet one or more of the following criteria. So all three have to be met. The first is that it's associated with events that have made a significant contribution to the broad pattern of our history. We do not feel that this addition is associated with events that have made a broad, significant contribution. Two are associated with the lives of significant persons of the past. We were unable to determine any association with a significant person. Three embodies the distinctive characteristics of a type, period, or method of construction, or that represents the work of a master, or possess high artistic values, or that represent a significant and distinguishable entity whose components may lack individual distinction. We do not think that it meets this criterion. And finally, that the audition would have to yield or may be likely to yield important information about history or prehistory. And we don't feel that it meets that criterion. And again, we're only talking about the audition. We're not talking about the main structure, of course. So that's our assessment of the historic analysis and evolution. And I will turn it back over to Eric to answer to walk you through some additional elements of how the design was developed. Thank you.
Hello again, Eric Puljung with Hanson Architects. I thought I could go through the various points that have been pointed out in the findings in an effort to tell a story about where we were going with our design as well. I have included a few images of adjacent homes that are right here on the square with this property. 432 Abercorn Street has a very similar bay window element over their stoop, and they also have a side porch. They are on a truss lot, so it is a slightly different siding of the building, but nonetheless very similar. With this particular home, we can see that there are notable additions on the back of the property in these images. Hopefully you can see those. As we move to the next truss lot at 426 Abercorn Street, this house I've always thought was quite interesting as well. The side porch on this home is probably the closest example of a wide footprint side porch as we have at our project. And again, I feel like this is a very similar home. This home has had additions made over time on the back of it, also multiple level additions. This porch has been closed in on the parlor level, and we can see a similar stoop and a similar rail pattern as we're proposing on our home here. I went through the neighborhood just to think through a little bit more about the shape and how buildings in Savannah are built and how side porches interact with main houses. These images are here just to give you some reference to how many side porches are terminated by additional structure behind them, creating more or less of an L shape for the home. The building at 214 East Taylor Street here, you can see this portion is actually the back end of that porch space. And then we have similar examples on Jones and Charlton Street. This is actually a side porch that has been more or less completely enclosed, which is terminated by masonry construction at the back. Other additions within the region, I would say within our ward or immediately adjacent to our ward, that have been done or are under construction right now. I just thought it would be good just to point these out. This East Gordon Street house is a four-story home with a three-story addition on the back, and you can see that from the Abercorn Street view, and then this is also from Abercorn. Multiple level additions on Jones, East Gaston Street, notable addition happening in the back of that property as well. And then, of course, West Gaston. So,
Eric, I'm going to have to cut you off. You're over your 10 minutes.
Okay. Sorry, I didn't realize I was getting close to my 10 minutes.
You're already two minutes over your 10 minutes.
Okay. Well, that's unfortunate. I do have information on the pilaster here, and
I'll give you like one more minute.
Okay. I'll run through quickly. Just wanted to show you that we do have the pilasters here, and we have modified our drawings to show the columns on the front porch to match that. And I did create a diagram here just to show you that using the existing addition, the existing garage footprint that was there before, Our new footprint that we're adding is 344 square feet, just as a reference. I thought that would be important to know. And I did want to show you that I did bring down the roof height of the porch addition and have introduced secondary or ABA rhythm for the bay division, just to help the scale of that be more in keeping with what we was referred to as a more narrow scale.
Can you go back to the diagram where you broke everything down and zoom into it so we can actually see it better? Thank you.
Does that help?
Yes.
Okay.
Does anybody have any questions for the applicant?
I do.
Go ahead.
Couple things. Could we talk a little bit about...
make sure you speak into your microphone.
Yeah. Can we talk a little bit more about two things? Number one, the condition of the addition that was done between 1937 and 1954 and why you want to remove it. Haven't heard too much about that.
Yep. So in visiting the property with the Twigs the first time, I was rather taken aback by the condition of the addition. The floors on the parlor level and second floor are both canted. I don't know if that's a component of the
porch.
If it was porch or not, as far as if that's still intact. The spacing of the material that we see is in excess of 24 inches for any type of joist material. And as we were standing on the top floor, I was like, we're seeing daylight through this house. What's going on? And on closer inspection, you can see where the roof line has started to pull away from the building. And there, somebody had put in, looks like some steel plates to try to keep the rafters connected to the masonry of the historic building. So we're creating some load on the historic building with that. And then at the connection to the building, so brick of addition to historic building, the addition is separating, I believe it's 3.5 inches at the top and down to an inch at the bottom. We did have a structural engineer look at that with us because we're like, well, what's the story here? And we did some excavation on the footings. And the footings for that masonry wall are not but, I guess, about 2 inches wider than the masonry wall itself. So his determination was that it was undersized footing, and therefore the masonry is pulling away that way.
Is there any, did you see, you didn't entertain the idea at all of trying to utilize that building, trying to stabilize it?
We talked about it, and the combination of what would need to be done for that to be stabilized versus the idea of could we create something more beautiful by bringing back the expression of a side porch just was a much preferred way to go. The addition just doesn't offer quality of character, quality of craftsmanship. There's nothing to it detail-wise. So it just didn't feel like an investment in that would be as beneficial as the investment in creating something that would be a much more beautiful structure and in the long run contribute more to the district.
Okay, and I have one more question, and this has to do with the garage and your connection of the garage with the main building. You know, as you know, we've had a lot of discussion recently here regarding carriage houses and their situation on the lots and where they're facing, obviously, and the spatial relationship to the main house. I had some concerns about this addition, the connection that you're making with the new construction garage with the main house, and whether or not we would be overlooking that spatial relationship that's so important in the historic district between what would be a carriage house and main building.
Right.
Can you speak to that?
So with this property not actually having a connection to the lane, I would see this as a property that doesn't have a carriage house per se. It doesn't really have that opportunity. So the idea of even having an exposed garage didn't feel right in the overall design concept, which is why we created this courtyard that serves as a driveway behind gates so that when the Twigs are in residence and have their garage door open, the city doesn't know it. You know, that's concealed behind the gates. So we're not trying to really express it as a garage in any way and just keeping it as a low profile mass.
although it was used as an automotive
right
the outbuilding at one time.
And, yeah, and the function seemed to be nice in that location, you know, to parallel where it had been previously, but also not having the driveway face Gordon Street.
Anybody have any additional questions?
One, just as a matter of, if we were to continue
make
this,
sure you speak into.
If we were to continue this with emphasis on staff's comments 1 and 2, it says for a maximum of 90 days. What do you think you would need to address those issues time-wise?
That's a question I hadn't considered. I'm sorry. As far as the idea of not removing the addition and then reducing the scale of the addition, I know that we have explored the idea of the addition and have concluded that we would like to request that it be removed and be rebuilt as a side porch. And as far as scale of what we're proposing, I have worked toward reducing the scale of the side porch. And I could certainly explore if there's something more to do to the massing of the rear of the property. I'm just talking out loud here, kind of on the spot, thinking about what would we need to do. I've reduced the parapet from the height of the adjacent historic structure, and I have located that addition in the most concealed manner that I could think of, which is behind this mass, and it's not, you know, a straight view from Gordon, and you can see it from Abercorn, but it is pushed back. And I actually, and as part of that question, I should have asked staff for clarification on that, because I do think the comment may be comprehensive of everything we're adding. I have been thinking about this space that I'm kind of highlighting in gray as what is the addition, whereas our side porch is more of a replacement of existing mass. But I, you know, if it were necessary for us to consider the massing of the addition, I would think that we would want to do that certainly in 90 days or less. Try to get to an answer for you. Sorry.
Does anybody else have any additional questions? Okay. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you.
Is there a member of the public that would like to comment? Make sure you state your name for the record. And remember to keep it to 3 minutes.
Hello, Andrew Jones with the Oglethorpe Plan Coalition. I actually concur with the applicant as to that addition. It is historic, but it's not all historic additions are worthy of preservation. To me, this aesthetically detracts substantially from the original building, which is the key asset here. But I am concerned about the visual compatibility of the addition, mainly with respect to that, the front part of that porch. The visual compatibility test, let's look at visually related examples, 430 Abercorn, which was brought up before, and the two houses next door. If you notice, all the porches have a vertical directionality. Even when they're wide, they have vertical divisions, which create a vertical motion. And in particular, look at the one on the right. That's almost the same configuration that we have here. But what makes it look much nicer are those vertical divisions as opposed to it being one horizontal mass. So what I am proposing that you give consideration to, and I believe the architect has already given consideration and did show an option, to add vertical elements here, so that we're in keeping with 7.89, the scale of the building, the porches, columns, and the directional character. That's one option. The other one is paired columns. You can see what a dramatic change it makes. Suddenly what was a wide, incompatible pattern now repeats the vertical motion of the main building. And in the third recommendation, I'm simply lowering the porch a little bit, which I believe the architect has already done. So the architect did show you at the very end a design similar to this, because I had shared this with the owner, the architect, and Ellen. And it would be good perhaps to have clarification if this could be under consideration. I think it's a solution that addresses some of the major visual compatibility problems. And you can see next to East Gordon, it echoes that quite a bit. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Does anybody else have members of the public like to comment? Make sure you state your name for the record, please.
Good afternoon. My name is Christiana Turner. I don't even need those. I own 115, 117 East Gordon Street, the property that abuts the planned project at 127 East Gordon Street. Mine is the yellow three-story house that just showed up with the one single sunroom. First, I would like to thank Madam Chair and the Board for this opportunity to speak. Secondly, I would like to commend MPC-HDBR for now posting new agenda items as they are registered with the HDBR staff, allowing the public a chance to review these items as well. As a next-door neighbor, I am grateful to Mr. and Mrs. Twigg that they are planning to restore one of the few remaining landmark districts residential jewels as a single family residence. Neighbors also appreciated the efforts of Hanson Architects and Ethos Preservation to engage neighbors for feedback in advance of the final proposal coming in. I agree with the comments made by Mr. Jones previously, and I encourage approval of this petition. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you again. I'm Steve Edwards, and I represent the Downtown Neighborhood Association. I don't think I can add anything to the comments that have already been made about the structural integrity of the addition or its historic significance. I also can't add anything to the comments about the design of the proposed addition beyond what's already been made. I do want to say, though, that this is an important building on a prominent square, and we want to go on record as by saying that since the building's been vacant or underused for many years and it's nearly derelict and decaying, we hope that the board and the owners of the buildings and their professional advisors can work together to reach an accommodation that will permit the historic building to be renovated and preserved. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ryan Jarles with the Historic Savannah Foundation. I guess I'll shake up the comments a little more than what we've had. My statement will be similar to that of my previous statement. I did mention this petition in my previous statement. Historic Savannah Foundation believes that this addition, although not an addition of the highest design, is one that is representative of the era in which it was constructed within, and it is a suitable and appropriate addition design-wise for that time period to the original structure. To us, this addition has gained significance in its own right, and we do not support its demolition. With that being said, I won't reiterate all of my previous comments from the last petition, but we would reiterate those same concerns that we had in the previous statement. This is a district. It is not an individually listed building. I'm sure Ms. Taylor, I'm sure Ms. Isaacs understands that with a specifically a National Register district, buildings don't necessarily have to be of the utmost and immaculate design to be included as contributing within said district. As I previously mentioned, 501 through 511 Hartford Street are contributing within this district. The integrity is still there on this addition, and we would just like to make that known. Ms. Taylor said it earlier, specifically about aesthetics. This building doesn't have the greatest aesthetics, but I don't believe that, you know, every building within a district needs to have this like beautiful, intricate design going on for it to contribute to that district and to represent a certain period in time. Not every building needs to be the 1880s or the 1890s in Savannah. We need that differentiation in time period throughout our district to be a district. That's why our district ends in 1960, to allow for these things to exist. And aesthetic can mean so many different things to so many different people. So I just want to make that known as well. And I do respect Ms. Harris. I work with her a lot. But I would like to state Ethos Preservation is not the person who decides what is contributing within these districts. We have staff's recommendation of denial for the removal of that addition. They would like it to be seen. HSF is stating that we feel that it is contributing in its own right. And I will add, though, in the opposite of what I've been saying, our ARC did review the proposed drawings, and they did appreciate the architect's design, and they do feel that if that historic addition was not there, that this proposed addition would be entirely appropriate, and they would support that addition. So they just wanted me to let you know that that design they do feel is appropriate. But that is in the case that this addition didn't exist already on this historic building. Thank you.
Thank you.
Hello, I'm Ross Shepherd. I'm right directly across the square at 128 East Taylor Street, and I just want to speak in favor of demolishing the addition and reiterate what some of the other neighbors have already said. Specifically, I want to talk about the issue of is it contributing, is it not contributing, does it have significance, does it not have significance? And I wholeheartedly agree with what Ryan said regarding the previous building. If it was a standalone building, I think, well, certainly it would be contributing because it was built during the period of significance. But it's turned an original building into sort of a Frankenstein's monster kind of thing. And this addition actively detracts from the integrity of the original building. And I think when you look at historic buildings, even within a district, you have to evaluate each individual building for itself as an individual building. And if you're always trying to accommodate the entirety of the history that has occurred to one building during a period of significance for a district, then we wouldn't ever change anything that occurred during the period of significance to any building, even if the change is restoring some of the original integrity of that building. I don't really have any comments on the design of the proposed addition. I think it's fine. If it was mine, I might do something a little different. I think, you know, maybe everyone would come up with something a little bit different. But I think to the question of whether or not this addition contributes to the overall integrity of this historically significant property, I think it absolutely does the opposite of that. And I really hope that it comes down soon and gets replaced with something more compatible. Thanks.
Thank you. Do we have any additional public comments virtually? No? Okay. Would the petitioner like to respond to the public comments at all?
Hello, Eric Poljung returning to speak to the public comments. We are thankful for the support that we've received from the neighbors and have appreciated their input and also the input from the community today. We recognize that this is, you know, a hard topic, and we have really done a thorough job to examine what would be best and have concluded that the best thing that we can request is that the masonry addition be removed and that we be permitted to replace it with the side porch. We've studied this, and we think it would be a beautiful addition to the whole neighborhood and also to help gain or restore the significance of the structure that does seem kind of like a Frankenstein, to quote the most recent speaker. So with that, I'll just say that there are a few other points that Leah had brought up that we do have clarified, and we greatly appreciate you taking the time to review this project and consider this for us.
Thank you. At this time, we will now enter into board discussion, and no further public comment will be accepted. I'm going to start with you, Ms. Taylor.
Ellie, I have a question that I think maybe
it might have slipped by me. I guess this is more of a staff question.
Okay.
Regarding the final condition that you mentioned here, remove the curb cut and vehicular gates from the east-west street, which is on Abercorn, I guess, what they're proposing, and you're thinking it needs to go to Gordon?
No, I think the opposite.
Is it just the opposite?
It's the opposite.
I just want to clarify
Gordon
that.
Gordon is the east-west street.
Pardon?
Gordon is the east-west street.
Oh, right.
Right. Okay, so there's an existing curb cut and vehicular gates on Gordon that we're recommending be removed.
Would you mind showing us the diagram of that again real quick? I'm sorry.
Nope.
I just want to not miss that.
So they have it dimensioned here, even on the, this is Gordon here. And there's an existing curb cut on Gordon and a vehicular gate here. It's the way that the site has been accessed for a very long time to get to the garage that was back here. And they want to come in through this.
Right. That's what I was trying to say. You were trying to recommend that it be on the east-west street.
No, remove the east-west street.
Have it on Abercorn, not Gordon.
Correct. That's what I meant to say. Yeah.
Okay. That's what the ordinance actually requires.
Yes. Yes. So I was wondering, what does that have to do with the ordinance and how does that play into all this?
So the ordinance requires, obviously, if there's a lane, that it be off of the lane. Second, if there's not a lane, it's a north-south street. And then third, if there's not access to a north-south street or a lane, then it could be east-west street. Well, their current access is off of east-west street, and they're adding a north-south entrance. So they really shouldn't have both. Access to both parts of the site with vehicular. It's a recommendation. I mean, it's an existing condition, but you also don't have to let them have a second one.
Okay, that's the part that I was confused about.
Yeah.
All right. So it's really not against the ordinance at all. This just has to do with something additionally that's being done.
Do you have anything additional? Do you have anything additional that you would like to say?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have some concerns as well about the addition. The one thing that makes it difficult on the historic addition is the fact that one of the Secretary of Interior standards does state that certain additions that occur over time can gain significance in and of themselves. And that's a tough one to. And that's what happened here with this addition. You know, it isn't pretty. It isn't well done. The difficult part about it is the condition of it and the fact that you're trying to go back and restore what was there historically. That also adds some merit. So it's a complicated situation. I do have some concerns about the garage, the new construction of the garage and the connection of that to the main building and making it into kind of this L-shape. Seems to be meandering design that seems to take over, you know, the spatial relationship in the back, where I think normally there would be an open space, or at least there was in 1954 when that garage was built. So I have concerns about that design as well. And I'll stop so everybody else can speak.
We'll go around again. Mr. Thompson.
Well, I was confused about the driveway too, which you're not saying too. You want to eliminate one of them, and the one on Gordon Street's one you're recommending to eliminate. Okay, that discussion helped clarify that for me. I guess I'm a little confused between the staff recommendation to maintain the addition and that it's historic and the other information we've gotten. So I'm just going to say I'm confused about which way that should go. I tend to lean towards keeping things up to the maximum condition and that would suggest doing something that the applicant would like. I am confused also, maybe somebody can point this out. When I look at an aerial photo, it doesn't look like there's room for a garage, unless that building behind you is part of your building already. Could somebody give me a detail on that? Because I'm confused on the aerial.
The garage outline, the brick, was there already. They partially demolished it, so they made it basically a shell. So that part is existing, so to speak.
Yeah, right now you can see right here where the garage was.
Okay. This two-story stucco building that's in the corner there, I guess that's pretty close. Okay. All right. Thank you.
Mr. Higgins.
I guess I, too, am torn about the existing addition, but I tend to lean toward retention of it. I've got some real concerns about the massing of this whole thing because it seems to really begin to overpower the existing building and also the lack of separation from the existing house and the accessory structure, because we're just seeing a lot of projects where everything's filling up the entire lot. Mm-hmm. And I've got to think about this one a bit more.
Ms. Gwen.
I agree with my colleague's previous comments.
Mr. Alshuler.
The edifice is growing. It grew before, and it seems like it's growing more now. And while I appreciate the change from masonry to porch, the footprint feels very large in trying to integrate the garage and the original structure. So I wish we could think about mass and size. It seems it's just growing and growing. I could probably say more, but I'll stop.
Okay, we'll go around a second time. Ms. Taylor?
I will add one thing. I think that if the addition was removed, I feel that this addition is still massive and takes on really more of the reflection of the way it is right now versus if you're trying to actually make it more like it was originally between 1937 and 1954 when they did the wood porch, then it would be smaller. I think that would be easier for everybody to accept scale-wise. This is just taking the same exact footprint. It appears to me this the same dimensions as what there is now. So it's just this massive addition that's being replaced to look like a porch, but in fact, it's still a massive addition. It's not porch-like, which would be more appropriate design-wise context within the context of the neighborhood. So I think the massiveness of it is a concern.
Ms. Thompson.
Do not have any further comments at this point. Thank you.
Mr. Higgins.
Just short comment that I concur with everything that Ms. Taylor just said.
Mm-hmm. Ms. Gwen.
Nothing further.
And Mr. Alshuler.
I'm sometimes very grateful for my fellow board members articulating what I wished I had. Thank you, Ms. Taylor.
Okay. We will now entertain a motion. Can we bring up the staff review, please, or the staff recommendation?
Higgins, I recommend the Savannah Historic District Board of Review with regard to MPC file number 23-002535 COA, which is 127 East Gordon Street. continue this request until the, what would the meeting 3 months out be?
Give me 2 seconds.
September, I don't know what date.
September 13th.
To the September 13th meeting also including staff's recommendation to address points 1 through 7 with an emphasis on points 1 and 2.
So you want to include all 7 recommendations. Okay. Okay, so the current motion on the floor is to continue to the September 13th meeting with all of staff's existing recommendations. Do I have a second?
I just have a question, Madam Chair. If the applicant wanted to come back before this board sooner than the September 13th meeting, would that be permitted?
Yes, they can. Yeah.
Under the current motion?
I believe they can, right, Leah? We just say to the yes. Yeah. It's just it has to be by that date, by the September 13th date.
Gwen, second.
Okay. Ms. Taylor, how do you vote?
Aye.
Mr. Thompson?
Aye.
Mr. Higgins?
Aye.
Ms. Gwen?
Aye.
And Mr. Altshuler?
Aye.
Okay. With that, it has been continued per staff recommendations. Okay. Next, a list of the staff reviews has been attached to the agenda. I will read through those and then we will vote for acknowledgement. The petition of Heather Philgate, 23-002650-COA, 528-530 Price Street, color change to the front doors. The petition of Doug Bean Signs, 23-002422-COA, 25 East Broughton Street, non-illuminated wall sign on front facade. The petition of Niles Bolton, 23-002512-COA, 226 East Bryan Street, amend 22-005843-COA alterations. The petition of Stephen Bodek, Incorporated, 23-002237-COA, 126 East Taylor Street, brickery pointing with test patch condition. The petition of Hanson Architects, 23-002164-COA, 109 West Broughton Street, color change, non-illuminated sign and lighting. The petition of David Cutlip, 23-002803552 East Charlton Street, 11 replacement windows, non-contributing structure. The petition of Musgrove House, 23-002805-COA, 121 West Gordon Street, new front entrance wall sign. And lastly, the petition of Jay Andrews, 23-002647-COA, 25 West Broughton Street, stucco repair and in-kind replacement. Vote in acknowledgement, please say aye.
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 Any opposed for any reason? Okay. Next is attached are the reports regarding work without a certificate of appropriateness, work that exceeds the scope of an issued COA, and then work that was done that is inconsistent with an issued COA. Next is the report on items that were deferred to staff for June. Notices, proclamations, and acknowledgments. There are the June report for both stamp drawings and inspections completed by staff. We have nothing currently listed under other business unless somebody has something they would like to discuss. Go ahead.
The staff position on the addition to that building that we just talked about as being contributing, right? And there is different information coming from the applicant. Who gets to decide that? Is that this board making that decision?
Yes.
And if we don't, if they don't agree, they go to the Zoning Board of Appeals?
Correct.
Okay. I just want to get the sequence of things. Thank you.
Yep. I think it's interesting to point out that she was using the NUZO criteria to say that you know, based on the NUZO criteria, it didn't really apply here. But it depends on where you feel your emphasis is as well. You know, I think the staff, and I can understand, feels that the Secretary of Interior Standards says that every change that may occur, or not every change, but changes that may occur over time develop significance in themselves. Feel like that has more weight.
Yeah. It's just the basis of evaluation. Yeah. It's like, which one do you?
Right.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to point that out because that was the differentiation too. That was kind of interesting.
And the other thing that they notated is that there's potentially, because obviously we've not all looked at the building hands on ourselves, right? But because of the fact that he even mentioned the floor is slanted, there's probably remnants of those porches there. And they were just enclosed later, which would then give it even further significance in my mind. But regardless, do you have anything else you want to talk about?
Well, just that my criteria is the damn thing going to stand up over time?
Well,
and, you know, there was a building that took the lives of a bunch of people that about a third that collapsed recently, and that can happen. So,
right. Yeah. Well, and it's also interesting to note too that the previous owner application too, they were going to keep that addition and do what they needed to do. So clearly it can be done. Just a matter, I guess, of how much money you really want to spend or what you want it to look like. So anyway, regardless. Okay. So we will have our next pre-meeting here, July 12th. 2023 at noon, and then we'll have the regular meeting starts at 1:00, and we are adjourned.